Hi there, everybody. Welcome to episode number 35 of the podcast Then and Now. I'm your host, John Shomo. In this episode, we will go over the so-called facts of the week for the week of October 25th through October 31st, Halloween. Then we will tackle some current event topics, some more fun to tackle than others. And then we'll do our three good questions segment, as usual. And that'll close it out for us for this week. So let's get it started with the facts for October 25th. October 25th, 1986, saw Game 6 of the World Series played at Shea Stadium in New York between the Boston Red Sox and the New York Mets. The Red Sox led the series 3-2. This is one of those games you remember where you were, and it's very odd. I was at a wedding that night. It was a Saturday night. Steve and Sippy got married. The reception was over in Mogador someplace. And so I set the old VCR and put a tape in and was taping the World Series game, and I was going to watch it later when I got home. That was the plan. Well, we went to the wedding, had a good time, came home. I turned the television on to start rewinding the tape and so forth. And when I turned the television on, the visual was Dave Henderson of the Red Sox rounding third base after hitting a home run to put the Red Sox ahead in extra innings in Game 6. And so I'm not turning it off at that point, so I sat down and watched the rest of the extra innings play out. If you know the game, you know what I'm talking about. It's the game where Bill Buckner missed the ground ball at the end and the Mets won, and they won two nights later in Game 7 and won the World Series. I hate to slander Bill Buckner like that. Bill Buckner was a tremendous player. He probably shouldn't have been in there at the end. He had bad knees at that time, but the manager, John McNamara of the Red Sox, thought that they should win it with Bill Buckner on the field, that he deserved to be on the field. Well, that's where his emotions got the best of him. They had been using Dave Stapleton as a defensive replacement for Buckner in late in games when they led. He probably should have stuck with that plan, but they had already blown the lead and it was tied when the error occurred. So those of you that are baseball fans, you know exactly what I'm talking about here. One of the more memorable games in World Series history. It added to the Red Sox litany of frustrations since 1918. They've overcome that, obviously, with a bang here in the 21st century. But a very memorable Game 6 of the 1986 World Series was played on October 25th. Sad memory here on October 25th, 1999. We heard news of a unidentified private plane flying out of control or on a straight line, but no contact with the pilots or anything, flying across the middle of the country up from Florida. It turns out that plane was the private plane of the golf pro Payne Stewart. He and five others died when the plane ran out of gas and crashed up in North Dakota or Montana. How sad. He was a beloved figure on tour. He won a couple of major championships. He had just been on the winning Ryder Cup team up at Brookline earlier that fall. Just a tremendous tragedy. He's well-beloved figure in the game and is sorely missed. Birthdays on October 25th include the artist Pablo Picasso, born in 1881. New York Giants outfielder Bobby Thompson, who hit the shot heard around the world to put the Giants in the World Series, beating the Brooklyn Dodgers in the playoff in 1951. Bobby Thompson, born 101 years ago. Bob Knight, Oroville High School graduate, Ohio State Buckeye, national champion 1960. Cuyahoga Falls High School JV coach out of college, then went on to coach at West Point for 30 years at Indiana University, and finally at Texas Tech. Bob Knight, born October 25th, 1940. He just passed away a couple years ago. Coached three Indiana teams to national championships. A controversial figure, to be sure. There's no doubt that he could coach the heck out of a basketball game, that's for sure. Some of his other antics and you know, ideas of how to coach may be debatable, but he is one of the all-time great coaches in the history of college basketball. Boston Celtics Hall of Famer center Dave Cowens will be 76. The Boston Celtics tonight, as I record this on Tuesday, will raise banner number 18 to the rafters of the Garden. celebrate last spring's World Championship. Nancy Cartwright, the voice of Bart Simpson, will be 67. Nancy Cartwright has voiced Bart Simpson since the late 1980s. Hall of Fame pitcher Pedro Martinez will be 53 on October 25th. And singer Katy Perry will be the big 4-0. Moving to October 26th, the Erie Canal opened in New York State on October 26th, 1825. That's a bigger thing than you think. It was the first waterway that connected, in the United States, that is, the Great Lakes to the Atlantic Ocean. The Erie Canal ran over from the Hudson River toward Buffalo and the Great Lakes. So that was a big improvement in business and transportation at the time. Another memorable game, unfortunately for Cleveland fans, 1997 World Series Game 7 was played October 26, 1997. Extra inning loss for the Cleveland Indians against the Florida Marlins at the time. I remember we had a in-service day at school the next morning. It was a Monday morning. And boy, you want to see people dragging in with long faces after that game. Oh boy, that's a very memorable event, unfortunately. The last Talmadge High School football game at Rashaki Stadium was played October 26, 2018. The Blue Devils moved to the new stadium at the new high school for the 2019 season. Host Pat Sajak, Wheel of Fortune, 78 years old, on October 26th. Hillary Rodham Clinton, former First Lady, former Senator, former Secretary of State, almost President. Hillary Rodham Clinton will be 77. The former manager of the Cleveland Indians, who managed that 1997 World Series, Mike Hargrove, still lives in the area up in Richfield someplace. Mike Hargrove is 75. Actress Rita Wilson, wife of Tom Hanks, actress in her own right. Actress Rita Wilson will be 68. Keith Urban will be 57, and Katie Tour of NBC News will be 41. On to October 27th, which is Navy Day. Yay, Navy. The Federalist Paper No. 1 was published anonymously on October 27th, 1787. It was the first in a series of essays, if you will, written by proponents of the new Constitution, which needed to be ratified by the 13 states. We now know that the anonymous writer of Federalist Paper No. 1 was none other than Alexander Hamilton. The New York City subway opened for the first time on October 27, 1904. More recently, another shooting tragedy in the United States, 11 worshipers killed at the Tree of Life Synagogue, literally in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood in Pittsburgh, October 27, 2018. Birthdays include maybe the most fascinating person in American history. I never met a social studies teacher in my entire career who didn't love talking and teaching about Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt, born October 27, 1858. If he's not the most fascinating character in American history, I'd like to know who is. Pirates Hall of Fame outfielder Ralph Kiner was born October 27, 1922. Nixon aide H.R. Haldeman, born October 27, 1926. Donald Trump's second wife, Marla Maples, will be 61 on October 27th. Former Dublin Kaufman, Notre Dame and Browns quarterback, now seen on Fox College Football, Brady Quinn will be 40. And Evan Turner, the former Buckeye basketball star, will be 36. Never forget the half-court shot he made to beat that team up north in the Big Ten tournament while he was at Ohio State. On to October 28th, Harvard University founded in Cambridge, Mass. October 28th, how about this, 1636. That's a long time ago. The Statue of Liberty was officially dedicated in New York Harbor, October 28th, 1886. Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev ordered the dismantling of their missiles in Cuba, basically ending the Cuban Missile Crisis, October 28th, 1962. Birthdays include the man who invented and came up with the polio vaccine, Dr. Jonas Salk, born on that date in 1914. Hall of Famer as a player and longtime Cavs coach Lenny Wilkins will be 87. Caitlyn Jenner, 75. Bill Gates will be 69. And Brad Paisley will be 52. On to October 29th. And this is a great example of how quickly, probably too quickly, the wheels of justice used to spin. President McKinley's assassin, Leon Czolgosz, was executed October 29, 1901. The shooting occurred September 6th. McKinley died 8 days later. Czolgosz was imprisoned, tried, convicted, and executed within about 7 weeks of McKinley dying. And, you know, that's probably too quick. Our system probably takes too long now. Probably somewhere in between would be better, I would guess. The Turkish Republic formed October 29, 1923. In 1929, that date was Black Tuesday, the date on which the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the New York Stock Exchange started to fall precipitously, let's say, and an event from which it would not recover for a long time. It was kind of the kickoff, if you will, of the Great Depression. The first U.S. peacetime military draft happened on October 29, 1940. President Roosevelt knew that there was a likelihood that the United States would have to go to war at some point. He had kept us out of World War II to that particular moment, but had to start prepping. So there was a military draft in peacetime for the first time. Senator John Glenn returned to space at the age of 77 on October 29, 1998, aboard a space shuttle. John Glenn, if you recall, was the first American to orbit the Earth back in 1962. He went up 36 years later and studied basically the effects of space travel and weightlessness on people who are older. What a guy. John Glenn, one of the greats, one of the great people the state of Ohio has ever produced, for sure. Maybe the best. Hurricane Sandy hit the New Jersey coast on October 29, 2012, devastating the coastline just south of New York City. Birthdays include the actor Richard Dreyfuss, 77 years old. Winona Ryder will be 53. Actress Gabrielle Union will be 52. And quarterback Andy Dalton, still kicking around in the NFL, will be 38. Moving to October 30th, on the eve of Halloween in 1938, the CBS radio network presented an hour-long play on the radio based on H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. It was directed, produced, etc., by Orson Welles. And the history of that is tough to describe on a podcast. A lot of people thought that the Martians had really invaded the United States and were marching toward New York City. It was very realistically done. It was the early days of radio, and people have a tendency, and whenever a new medium comes out, we've seen it with television, we've seen it with the internet, etc., to believe what they see too often and hear too often. People were literally, you know, panicking at the thought of the Martians having actually invaded, even though they interrupted it for station identification and said, "This is Mercury Theater of the Air, War on the Worlds presentation of H.G. Wells' novel." People freaked out. Two people in Akron actually died in a car crash driving recklessly to church because they wanted to be in church, their family said, in case the Martians actually got here. These things really happened. It's crazy to think of, but it's true. It was a very well-done drama, by the way. Probably too well-done, I guess. On October 30th, 1974, that's 50 years ago, Muhammad Ali fought George Foreman in the jungles of Zaire. It was called the Rumble in the Jungle. Ali retained his heavyweight boxing championship using the rope-a-dope method of just letting Foreman punch himself out before the seventh or eighth round when he got him. Birthdays on October 30th. John Adams, underrated as heck as a great American. I think he's one of the greatest Americans that ever lived. John Adams, born October 30th, 1735 in Braintree, Mass. Henry Winkler, who played the Fonz on Happy Days, now a great producer-director. Henry Winkler, 79. Andrea Mitchell of NBC News is 78. Ivanka Trump, daughter of the former president, will be 43. The 2014 Heisman Trophy winner from Oregon, Marcus Mariota, will be 31. And everybody's favorite from Talmadge High School, my friend Bill Zirke, will celebrate a birthday on October 30th. If you were in Talmadge High School in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, you know him, you love him, you can't do without him. Happy birthday, Zirke. Okay. October 31st, we know, is Halloween. On that date in 1517, Martin Luther published his 95 Theses in what is now Germany. This is known as the beginning of the Protestant movement, the breakaway of some Christians from the Catholic Church. Nevada was admitted as the 36th state during the Civil War on October 31st, 1864. The only other state admitted during the Civil War was West Virginia. Benito Mussolini was appointed Prime Minister of Italy. Oh boy, we wish you had that one back. On October 31st, 1922, the Battle of Britain, the bombing, the incessant nighttime bombing by the Germans of British cities, ended on October 31st, 1940. Radar had been invented by then. Mount Rushmore was completed, the great carvings of the four U.S. presidents in South Dakota, on October 31st, 1941. Something, probably George Harrison's greatest achievement as a songwriter, was released as a single by the Beatles on October 31st, 1969. India's Prime Minister Indira Gandhi was assassinated by her bodyguards 40 years ago in 1984. Birthdays on Halloween, there's a big list of them here. Michael Collins, now passed away a couple years ago. The command module pilot on the first moon landing, Apollo 11, Michael Collins, born October 31st, 1930. He's the one of the three men involved in Apollo 11 who did not land on the moon. Armstrong and Aldrin did, as you know. Great journalist, former CBS TV reporter, anchorman Dan Rather is 93. Michael Landon, the actor, born on October 31st, 1936. Brian Piccolo, for Chicago Bears running back, who very famously, tragically died young of cancer. Brian Piccolo, born on October 31st, 1943. Jane Pauley, the former host of The Today Show, will be 74. The late, great comic actor John Candy, born on that date in 1950. Nick Saban, six, seven, whatever was, time national champion. Now on the College Game Day crew, Nick Saban, missed by Alabama fans this week in particular, will be 73. Hall of Fame first baseman Fred McGriff, crime dog, will be 61. And up-and-coming star on the PGA Tour, Ludwig Ober, will be 25. He is really good. Okay. That's an extended list of events and birthdays and so forth for this week. It's a chock-full week for those things. Moving on to some current event topics. Some are fun to talk about, some are not. Let's get started. First of all, salute to the Cleveland Guardians. They certainly exceeded all reasonable expectations for the 2024 season. I thought when Terry Francona announced that he was stepping down that, you know, he had been worth probably 10 games a year to that team for years. Hats off to Stephen Vogt. You know, I guess he made a couple of questionable decisions in the playoffs, but boy, he did a fantastic job in his first year as Guardians manager. They played their own way and made it very successful. They called it Guards Ball, and they had a great year. They probably need to improve their pitching staff a little bit. They, you know, obviously they were just throwing people out there toward the end, trying to put together bullpen games and so forth. They were hurt by the fact that their great closer, Emmanuel Clase, just kind of failed in the postseason, really. You're not guaranteed a second chance either. A lot of people probably think, well, the Guardians, they'll be back. They'll get another chance. You never know. I hope they do, but you never know in baseball. Sometimes that second chance doesn't come for a long time. But great year for the Guardians. A lot to look forward to next spring. The Browns, oh my goodness. As you might know, Deshaun Watson, the beleaguered quarterback, much of his own doing, ruptured his Achilles tendon, tore it in the game Sunday. He's out for the year, for probably at least a calendar year. It's a really tough injury. No one should cheer. Some of the fans at the stadium actually cheered when he got hurt. That's bad. Badly reflects on the city and Browns fans. I know that it's a very complicated situation with Deshaun Watson. I understand that completely. I'm not a big fan, but you can't cheer there. It's such a tough situation, and they've put themselves in that situation. It's probably the single worst transaction in the history of the National Football League, the trade that brought Watson to Cleveland in exchange for how many draft choices and the future of the team. Still, you don't cheer there. The decision was made before the game, by the way, to make Jameis Winston the third quarterback. That was really curious. I thought when I heard that they don't want people chanting for Winston to come in if Watson has a bad start to the game. I suspect that Jimmy Haslam on down, they might do that, and that might be why they did it. I don't know. But that made Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the young second-year quarterback, the backup. Watson gets hurt. DTR comes in. He struggles a little bit. He gets hurt, and Winston finishes the game, got a touchdown, got a two-point conversion. You know, they're a better team with him there. Obviously, he's got a lot more experience. It's such a mess, and that trade has just about flattened the Browns franchise. I don't like it. I'm a lifelong Browns fan, but boy, what a mess they have. They're 1-6, and they may not win again this year. Okay, just a quick note on the election, and then I'm going to delve into a longer topic here. I'm not sure why we even refer to Election Day anymore. Why? Because I voted 2 weeks ago now. Over 15 million Americans have already voted as of yesterday. It's more like voting season or voting month now, really. Most states have an extended period of time of early voting. People can vote by mail in many states. And everybody's like, well, 2 weeks to Election Day, which is true. You know, Election Day on the calendar is the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, November 5th this year. But millions and millions and millions of us have already done our duty and voted. It's just kind of an election season now. If you haven't gotten out and done it yet, find out when and where you can vote and how you can vote and get her done. I would certainly want to avoid the crowds on Election Day in a presidential election year. I have not voted in person on a presidential election year, Election Day, since 2004. We have voted early every 4 years at least since then. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Arnold Palmer here. Arnold Palmer was the epitome of class. He was adored by virtually everyone. They called his fans the Legion of Fans, Arnie's Army. He was the first big-time athlete, really, in golf history, for the first to make it big-time in commercials and so forth. He also excelled in the business world. He's a very, very successful businessman in many ventures. He was the model of how a famous athlete, actor, office holder, famous person, you name it, should treat their fans. How do I know that? Well, A, you know, a lot of watching TV and watching him play and listening to people talk about him. I saw it close up. I followed Arnold Palmer in 1976, I think it was, at the American Golf Classic at Firestone Country Club for 18 holes. Was part of Arnie's Army that day, and there were a lot of people. He hadn't won in like 5 years. He was kind of playing the string out, waiting to join the senior tour at that point in time. But you knew where Arnold Palmer was on the course at all times. And I was with him that day, one of many. I don't know that I've ever seen a person as famous as him treat their fans better. He would stop and chat when he was waiting to tee off. He'd look people in the eye, say, how you doing? Just a prince of a guy. And again, I'm talking now from personal experience as well as having listened to what everybody else said about the guy. And I think you know the reason that Arnold Palmer is a topic right now. For a presidential candidate, former president, to tell the story that Trump told a few days ago, let's just call it crude locker room talk about Arnold Palmer, to say that at a rally in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, Arnold Palmer's hometown, where he is just revered, is just obscene and very telling about who he is. And probably there's a lot of jealousy in there because Arnold Palmer was everything that Donald Trump is not. He was classy. He was almost universally admired. I don't know anybody that didn't like Arnold Palmer and never had to fudge a scorecard to win a golf match. Arnie was an Eisenhower Republican politically. He was close friends with former President Eisenhower. They golfed together all the time, visited each other's homes a lot. He was an old school Eisenhower Republican. Arnie's no longer with us. He passed away in 2016, but his daughter responded to this, what I would call a sordid episode, by relating a story that Arnie was in his last year of life, or sometime earlier in 2016. He passed away, I think, in late September, and watching TV, and Trump came on the TV. He was running for president that year, and Arnie saw Trump's image on the TV and kind of blurted out, "Oh, yuck," and walked out of the room. He never did, he never did business. Arnold Palmer never did business with anyone without playing 18 holes with them first. He figured if you found out a lot about a person by playing golf with them. And Arnold Palmer couldn't stand Donald Trump and the type of guy he was, politics aside. Now I know who I'd pick, and Arnie's a legend. He was great. Again, I saw it close up. I didn't have to hear all the other stories, which I did hear. But he's the model of how famous people should treat their fans and other folks. And just for Trump to tell a off-color story like that in his hometown is just despicable. All right, let's move on to better and brighter things. The World Series starts Friday at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles, Chavez Ravine. It is a familiar matchup for baseball fans between the New York Yankees and the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's the first time they've met in the World Series, though, in a long time, since 1981. It's the 12th time since their first World Series in 1941. The Yankees have won 8 of the previous 11 matchups with the Dodgers. The Dodgers won that last one in 1981. The Dodgers will have home field for games 1, 2, 6, and 7 if necessary. And the Yankees will host the middle three games at Yankee Stadium. Who do I think will win? Well, I lean a little bit toward the Dodgers. I think they're a little bit better team. Should be a tremendous matchup, though. It's not my favorite matchup. I like to see some other teams in there once in a while, but Yankees-Dodgers starts Friday at Dodger Stadium. Okay, on to the three good questions segment. If you have a good question that you'd like us to ask on the podcast, please get in touch with us at threegoodquestions, T-H-R-E-E, threegoodquestions@gmail.com, and we'll get your question on. We'll try to have it answered by the next week, and we'll invite listeners to email us with answers if they would like to. Last week, we asked two questions, and we're going to reveal the answers now. The first one was, only 7 quarterbacks have appeared in at least 4 Super Bowls. Name them. Well, here are the names. Terry Bradshaw, Roger Staubach, Joe Montana, Jim Kelly, Tom Brady, John Elway. I wanted to forget that one. Patrick Mahomes now with 4, and Peyton Manning. There are your 7 quarterbacks appearing in at least 4 Super Bowls. Now, that's only in the Super Bowl era, which began in the late 60s. There were some quarterbacks like Otto Graham played in 10 championship games in 10 years. He's the all-time leader in that, by the way. All right. Second question was, where was the first scheduled National Football League championship game played? What city and what venue? The city was Chicago, and the venue was on the north side, Wrigley Field. 1933, the Bears hosted the New York Giants in the NFL championship game. That was the first game that actually was on the schedule before the season started. Now, we have a new question here from Jeff Cole. Most of our questions are from Jeff Cole, by the way. Jeff is prodigious, to say the least. Of all of the Group of 5 college football programs, that's the conferences that aren't the Big Ten, the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC. Other than those 4 conferences, of all Group of 5 college football programs, only 3 of them have amassed 700 wins or more. Which 3? So in other words, 3 of the non-big-time conference college football programs have at least 700 wins. We're talking about FBS now, not Division 2 or 3 or whatever. Only 3 have at least 700 wins. Which 3 college football programs would those be? If you know the answer or want to take a stab at it, Have at it. Email us at threegoodquestions@gmail.com. Well, that'll do it for a little bit of a long-winded episode of Then and Now. I'm glad you stuck with us. A lot going on here in the end of October. We'll be following the events very closely as we move forward. Thanks for choosing us out there in the podcastosphere. I'm your host, John Shomo. This is episode 35 of Then and Now. Have a great week, everybody.